This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of We Saw the Devil. Today's episode was supposed to be a quick 48 hours episode update, the one that aired on Saturday night, but alas, Justin Lum busts in like the freaking Kool-Aid man and unloads a bunch of new stuff.
It's true. So we do have more information for you guys, including the 48 hours episode.
So yeah, we have a full episode of Lori Vallow updates for you guys. And there's quite a few significant things this week, I would say.
I think so.
If you've noticed on our social media this week, every week we do just straight up updates, new information that comes down the pike. So we decided, because this case is so complex and has so much going on, and there are 4,005 different Facebook groups devoted to it, we decided to throw it out to you, to the listeners. So we want to answer your questions. I think that we have all, right, been sitting and talking either about a podcast or a case, and someone, you know, you have to explain the Lori Vallow case to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had to do that, Amanda?
Oh, yeah. And if you think about it, too, a lot of people have gotten on this Vallow freeway at different times.
Yes.
So, you know, depending on where you start, you know, it's easy to keep up from where you start. But going backwards, sometimes you're like, wait, when did that happen? Wait, who said that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very common thing, you know, especially with us when we refer to certain documents from like February and things like that, too. A lot of people are like, wait, what document? Wait, why did it say that? Who's that person? So mm-hmm. especially on like our YouTube channel, we do get a lot of questions and we try to, you know, put links or
yeah,
whatever was missed. But we figured this might be easier.
I was talking to my mom the other day and she doesn't listen to the podcast. She's not really involved in stuff like that. And she was like, are you guys still doing that lady in Idaho? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, tell me a little bit about it.
You're like, where do I begin?
I was like, okay. So this lady da, 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 and like went down the rabbit hole. So I'm like, you know what? Like Amanda just said, people got on Noodle Hair Freeway at mm-hmm. different times. And so, yeah, we want to answer your questions. Like some people I'm still shocked don't know certain pieces. And then I have to stop myself and be like, you've been, you know, at this since the very beginning.
Right. Right.
So we want to answer any and all questions that you have. We're going to do it for this episode, and holy shite, the response has been overwhelming.
It's been nuts. So if you can, please submit your questions on any of our social media or go ahead and email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com by Friday, and that's May 22nd. And then we'll pick either, you know, the most popular or the most commonly asked questions,
mm-hmm.
and we'll try to answer as many as we can for next week's episode, but we'll need some time to research. So if you can please get them in by Friday the 22nd, we will look through them all. And some of them are not answered yet. I will just state that now. Some of them have not been answered. There are no documents to answer each one, but we will try our best to find what little information is out there for certain ones.
That is true. And then also in separate news, our Patreon-only episode will be coming on Friday. Yay.
And thank you so much to our newest patrons that joined this week, Ashley, Darla, and Susan. I believe all three of them already joined our Patreon-only group and have already started in our conversations.
Mm-hmm. So if you haven't, check us out on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. There are different tiers with different benefits. You can absolutely find something that works for you or something that you will like. And I have been having so much fun in our Patreon-only Facebook group. There's conversation about like everything under the sun, not just true crime. And it is so much fun.
Yeah. And I like getting to know, you know, the people that listen to us too. So getting to know them on a personal basis.
Yep. For as little as $3 a month, you can support the show. And we would greatly appreciate that.
All right. Should we move on to our Vallow update of this week? Let's start on the 48 hours episode. So I know it was delayed. And I feel like they changed the way that they were going to do it. At least that's my guess, because all the other interviews had come out. And I feel like it wasn't just a big interview with Summer and with Janice like I thought it was going to be. It was a little bit more, and they had a lot more guests than I expected.
Yes, same here.
So I was actually pleasantly surprised by it. Not that there is a ton more information. I won't say there's a lot of like jaw-dropping new information, but we finally got to speak, in a sense, to some of the people that we hadn't been able to before, or get a couple additional questions answered.
So let's go ahead and start. So let's start with Yellowstone.
Right. So they're saying there's no evidence of Tylee leaving Yellowstone, which we pretty much knew. And then they talked about the speculation of that she could have been pushed into one of the hot pots. And they had, you know, someone that knew a lot about Yellowstone talking, and he said the pools are boiling and they have the acidity of battery acid for certain ones. Yeah. And he kind of alluded to, like, you need to kind of know the park to know which ones. So the interview wasn't just like, let's talk to this person the entire time. It kept going back and forth. So you'll hear us refer to some of these people a couple times throughout the episode. But he did mention, like, Yellowstone's a great place to get rid of a body because there's so much wildlife there that you may not even find a lot. So that was kind of scary and sad. Like, we all knew it in the back of our heads, but just, like, hearing it out loud,
hearing someone state it, is it different?
Right. And April came back. So April, remember, was Lori's friend from Hawaii, and
she's like, not today, Satan.
Right. I am like, thank you, like, for this background. She talked a little bit about how Charles and Lori seemed very happy together when she met them, and the things she said about Lori that stood out to me is Lori was the mother everyone wanted to be. So she was just like the great mother she had. She was friendly and, like, you know, everyone looked up to her, and she was kind of like the ideal mother, which, what the hell happened?
Yep.
Now, there was an interview with Echo too, and I think I've mentioned her in one of the shows prior because she is Tylee's best friend, Vicia, and I think I said it wrong in her last episodes ago, but Vicia was Tylee's best friend, and that is Vicia's mother, Echo. She's also in the Christmas Misery group. That's where I saw some of her posts right when I started following the case.
Same here.
And a lot of the things that were shared, like those videos and stuff, I had seen them on Vicia's Facebook page a while ago. So they're on there publicly. And she just talked about kind of the bond that JJ and Tylee had, you know, because she was around them quite a bit, and how much her daughter even got along with Lori, and they got along well and loved each other.
Yeah.
So again, ideal mother years ago.
Which is so weird because so many people speculated that Lori had some sort of switch flip, I guess, right around the time she met Chad Daybell. But then, you know, more information has come out about her time with Joseph Ryan, and she was pretty much batshit crazy then too. So, but it's so weird how so many people view her and just think she's so great and how, like, much of a loving mother she was.
Right, right. And I wonder how she was behind closed doors because, you know, I understand that Vicia was over quite a bit. So maybe, I don't know, could she turn it on and off, you know, like when a friend was over, can I be the ideal mother now? And then I'm crazy. I don't know. But I mean, they hung out quite a bit, and I'm pretty sure Vicia went to Hawaii a couple times, or I don't know how many times, but she's visited Tylee when they lived in Hawaii, and then, you know, of course, continued their friendship when they were back. So who knows? Another person that made an appearance on here is Neil from the Dog Training Elite. Remember, that was Bailey, which was JJ's service dog's trainer. But they did mention that, again, Bailey helped JJ sleep through the night. They mentioned that he used to wander outside of the house in the middle of the night, and Bailey helped keep him, you know, in bed. So I believe the dog was necessary.
Yeah, unlike what people have claimed.
Right.
Oh, Lori.
Right. Well, and there's other, I understand there's other things that you can do if you don't have a service dog to keep your child in the house, different strategically placed locks and stuff like that. But if he's comfortable in having, you know, a friend kind of with him at all times, why take that away from the kid?
Right.
They also spoke with Morgan Lowe, and again, he's the CBS reporter that we saw last week with some of the interviews. And here's something that I guess I just kind of put it out of my head, but he mentioned that at the beginning of 2019, Lori left Charles with both kids for 2 months, thinks that she went and met up with Chad. So I don't know if there's any way to prove where she was or what she was doing, but that is kind of odd.
Because so many people, everyone constantly brings up when Lori took Tylee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And disappeared for, what, like 50 some odd days. But no one actually discusses when Lori left Charles with both the kids and peaced out.
Exactly. So I feel like I've read it somewhere or something, but like it's not something that's discussed very often. So
right.
That was, I think, another interesting piece that came out of it. And then when she returned, it sounds like, at least the way that I interpreted it, is that's when she started speaking all the nonsense to Charles and April about being a chosen one, speaking to dead people, having supernatural powers.
Yep.
Yeah, she was very special after this trip, wherever the hell she went. So April said Lori told her that Charles was already dead and he had a demon living inside him. So I'm thinking that's where that Nick Schneider thing comes up. April added a detail, though. This is probably the biggest thing I think that came out of it. About being one of the chosen ones. So remember, yep. We talked about how Lori came to her and she's like, you're one of us, and tried to like recruit her. Lori was appointed to gather the remaining members of the chosen, right? Well, when Lori tried to recruit April as one of the chosen, she basically said it comes at a heavy price. You're two boys, which is terrifying. What it entailed is that she must separate herself from her children and join Lori and find the other chosen ones so they all could be together. And of course, she respectfully declined.
I don't know how respectful I could be at that point.
I believe like, that
you crazy bitch.
Pretty sure she said respectfully. I'd have to go back. She did. I'm like, what the hell? And then is this why Melanie bounced too? You know, and left her kids in Arizona. Is that like a prerequisite to become part of these chosen people? I mean, it sounds like it is.
It sounds like it.
So Melanie, remember, she got up and left and sent that weird text. I think we talked about it last episode to Brandon and just said, yeah, like I'm moving. In these interviews lately, she keeps going, you know, I miss my kids. I want to be part of my kids' life. Like he took them away from me. No, you got up and you left. If you wanted to fight for them, you should have remained here.
Which it makes me wonder why now she's making such a big deal out of the custody stuff going on. Is it just a ploy because she realizes that Lori is going to get caught and nailed now? So now she's trying to play the good doting mother.
That's my guess. Just because it doesn't show, like actions speak louder than words. So I'm sorry, your text messages aren't showing that you love your children enough. I don't know. Maybe there's something else again. I don't know. But I would never leave my kid. You know, like I would never leave states without my kid to start over. I'm sorry. You buckle up and you're there for the long haul. So very strange to me. And I'm wondering if maybe Lori had something to do with that random move. You know, obviously she had to. She moved next door to Lori.
Yeah.
But maybe Lori said some weird nonsense about being a chosen one and she had to leave her kids. And who knows? So
it's possible.
Back to Yellowstone. They kind of go back to Yellowstone again. September 8th is the date of that Yellowstone photo. So remember in that photo, it shows Tylee, JJ, and Alex. That photo was taken about a week after they arrived in Idaho. So again, where did Tylee make all these BFFs that she practically lived with, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the last record of Tylee. And then JJ was seen in that video. Like, I don't know if it was a doorbell video or some sort of security-looking video. And then he attended school until September 23rd. September 24th is when Lori told teachers that she was going to homeschool. So my question is, what did these teachers think? You know, did they notice a difference between September 8th and the 23rd with JJ? Was he acting differently? Because, you know, if Tylee wasn't there, his very bonded sister, was he more upset? Was he acting different? You know,
right.
She was a critical person in his life. So I'm just curious if anything's come from the school saying like, yeah, actually he was acting a little different or he was more upset.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that just stood out to me personally is just Larry Woodcock. When he doesn't speak very much, you know, in a lot of these interviews, but when he does sound sincere to me.
Yes, he does.
And just the words that he said in this one, at least, you know, I know that they picked and chose different interviews from him. But when he says things like, it's killing my soul, and how emotional he gets about the kids. And then the last one that made me just really sad is, in JJ is my heart. I'm like, this poor guy.
He's hurting.
He truly is. And I know, I feel like Kay is kind of the stronger one with that. Like, she is just like, no bullshit, we need these kids. And then he's just like hurting, and it's so sad. Charles told Kay at one point, I mean, they mentioned it in this episode, that she did not want JJ anymore.
Yeah.
So if someone says that, you're like, okay, yeah, she has every right to step up and go, okay, like, give me this child. I want to care for this kid. If you heard a mother didn't want their kid, like, isn't that just natural to go, okay, what can I help with? Now, Summer and Janice said Lori stockpiled JJ's medication. Remember the unfilled prescription that we talked about before?
Yeah, I call bullshit on that.
Right. So I was like, how? Like, most medicine cannot be purchased in bulk. They don't allow for that. And then just, I don't know how much these ones are, you know, if insurance is helping or whatever, who knows. But I did reach out to a medical professional. And since it's not a controlled substance, I guess it is possible. However, sometimes, depending on the case, and every provider is different, every, you know, kid is different how they react to medications, it is common for providers to want rechecks for things like that.
Right.
So from what I can find, it looks like the average is like 3 to 6 months for rechecks. So I'm kind of wondering how much did she buy, if she did buy it in bulk, where did she buy it, and where's the records of that? As they were kind of talking to Janice and Summer again, Janice did mention the service dog, Bailey. And she said Charles loved Bailey, but JJ wasn't attached.
Yeah, that goes against everything that pretty much everyone has said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. For someone not to be attached, first off, to a service dog, that just blows my mind. But if he was sleeping through the night with the service dog, clearly he had some attachment. Maybe he didn't show it as much, and that's also very common, but they were attached in some fashion. She mentioned, too, that Lori had confiscated Tylee's phone back in September because she didn't want it to be tracked.
Again, who is this magical, you know, who is after her?
Right. And the fact is, maybe I would buy it if she had also changed her phone. But at least to my knowledge, she still had her phone. Because when Janice had mentioned that they had that phone conversation and showed the phone bill last week, that number does match the dog ad. So unless she dumped the phone right after that conversation, I feel like she still had that phone in, I think it was October 1st.
Well, furthermore, too, what I also do not understand is that if Lori was being followed or all of these invisible threats that they won't name who or what it is, but, you know, Lori was being threatened, why couldn't she go to the cops? Because I have never in my life seen someone have such good luck with the police, able to pretty much get away with, you know, Alex murdering your husband in front of you and the children. You get out of a mental health hold, right? By literally batting your eyes to the cop and him being like, oh, well, you seem okay to me. You know, like, she's had nothing but good luck with the police. So why, if she's so threatened, why can't she just go to the police? I don't get it.
Well, because remember, they'll let her down.
Yeah, right. She's just had such a running history of disappointment with the police departments. I understand.
Well, and they did say it was Kay and her family at one point. They mentioned that. But then they said it sounded like there was others, at least my interpretation. So I don't know. I don't see anyone wanting to harm a child in that sense that is asking for custody now.
Right.
Because then obviously there's going to be some sort of follow up, I believe.
Right.
I don't know. It's all silly. It went on to say April had mentioned that Lori had said that Tylee is a dark spirit, which no kid is a dark spirit. I also thought, and shout out to Justin Lum here, but they didn't give him credit for the email that clearly said Fox 10 on it. Like, it had that watermark for the dark spirit document.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said, and here's some information or something like that. I just feel like they should have shouted him out more.
Yeah,
I know it's a different competing network, and I think he even put a post on it like, hey, it had our logo.
Yeah, it's like Nate Eaton and Morgan Lowe have been getting a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Justin Lum has done 90% of the legwork here, guys. Right.
So shout out to Justin Lum because he is awesome. So during the show, they did mention more, like, if you want more information, we spoke with a cult expert. Go to our Facebook page. So after the show's over, I did go to the Facebook page, and there is a short clip with Flora Jessup, who is their cult expert. And it's like 2-3 minutes, I believe. She does say that there is a possibility that the kids could be alive, but Lori is unlikely to give them up. So she also says, you know, if they are alive, she believes that the kids are going to be used for a greater purpose within their ideology of what they're pulling towards. So what the group's pulling towards. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have other plans for the kids, which is super scary if that's the case. When and she was kind of talking about Lori, like when someone says that they're chosen by God to do something special in the world, they can believe that they're above the law because of their special mission, and especially that their salvation may be at risk. And mm-hmm. trying to understand, you know, Lori's perspective in a sense. And then at the end, she says, you know, they could be held by other members, the kids, and possibly in a bunker somewhere without knowledge of any of this going on.
Okay, what she's saying is true, I believe, with some, you know, cults and fringe groups and whatnot. But specifically with Lori and Chad, I do not believe that to be relevant whatsoever, because it's not the document naming Tylee a dark spirit. And then if you look at the verbiage on other documents and emails that people have leaked and people have published, they say that literally they insinuate that you have to kill them. To seal them in and get rid of them, mm-hmm. you know? A group like with the Kingston Clan, the Mormon fringe group of the Kingston Clan out of Idaho, or the FLDS Church, Warren Jeffs, you know, places like that where it's such a patriarchal group where women are, I mean, more or less breeders, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they keep women alive or keep women hidden. Or if a woman doesn't want to do something, they'll send her away to a bunker somewhere to reprogram her mind. That's not what this is about. You know, that's not what Chad and Lori are about. They're not about collecting as many women as they can to breed, to create the kingdom of God. That's not what they're doing. They have no mention of that. In fact, everything that they have said is dark spirits need to die. So I understand when they brought her on, but I think that her segment in that was kind of irrelevant in the greater scheme of things, to be honest.
I think it was to give everyone a little a little bit of hope, maybe. But remember, JJ is light.
That's what I also don't understand is where is he?
Well, my concern is maybe, you know, how they're preparing and they're gathering the people for end times. Children are just going to make it more difficult.
It's also going to make it more difficult for Chad to have his Lori time, too.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe he convinced her that he went dark, too. I don't know who could ever do that to a child, but maybe. I don't know. So did you have anything else on 48 hours? Your thoughts? Did you learn a lot?
I didn't learn a lot. I mean, a lot of this is stuff that we already knew, and they just kind of gave maybe one or two additional details on top of it. Yeah. So nothing mind-blowing, for sure.
But I was happy with it. Like, I feel like having the additional people made it a bit better.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, there were a few random updates throughout the week, too. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the Barry Lynn thing? I saw that was actually months ago from that post you sent me, but
yeah, I for some reason I never saw that again, and I totally forgot it existed.
Yeah, neither did I. All
right. So people are asking and wondering if Lori's family, as in like her mother and father and Summer, were part of the group, right? Chat's group. Mm-hmm. So it came out on Jason Mao's and Melanie Gibbs' Warrior Up podcast. It actually says on one of the title cards for the video, it says Barry L. Cobb and, you know, the email. And that email actually does belong to Barry Lynn Cox, who is, in fact, Lori's father.
Interesting. I wonder if maybe they didn't believe all of it, but they were like testing the waters of it. I don't know. But I mean, if his email address matched, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, and it was from a podcast that you couldn't download it anymore, but it was just the title screen, and it did, in fact, say Barry L. Cox on it. And so, I mean, and the email also does match the email address that Barry Cox, Lori's dad, had at that time. So that information's been around for months now. I don't know why I just ran across it the other day randomly, but that was kind of mind-blowing to me, because what if, right? What if Lori's parents are involved in all of this, too?
That's true.
Crazy. So also, do you want to talk about the update with the Melanie and Brandon custody battle?
Yeah. So this week, too, Justin Lem posted a couple updates to Melanie and Brandon's custody battle. And it wasn't the entire court document this time. There was a couple random pages. It kind of had both sides. It says, you know, mother and father. So mother being Melanie, father being Brandon. So number 22 said, mother believes father should be ordered to attend a high conflict parenting class. And he's continuously showed that he cannot co-parent with the mother. I was like, well, yeah, she's kind of a lunatic.
Jesus.
Right?
Like, she's not nuttier than a fruitcake.
No one wants to co-parent with someone who gets up and just moves away. Like, how hard is... I don't know. Yeah, you make it very difficult to co-parent with you. You know, if you were a little bit easier to work with. Maybe. And if you didn't hang around, I don't know, with the most talked about people in the news. Maybe.
Right.
I was just like shaking my head reading it. Number 23 said, father has provided false statement to the court. He claims that mother tried to have him killed.
I can see that one because there is no proof currently that Melanie planned to, you know, tried to have him killed.
Right.
I mean, don't forget that by all accounts, Melanie wasn't even aware that Alex had made an attempt on Brandon's life.
Right. Right. So I guess I don't know. We don't know who technically did that. Unless he saw her face. Sure. 24 said, father stated that mother has never expressed any concern for the safety of the children while in father's care. Mother provided text messages where she was trying to find out what was happening with her children. And this, I was frustrated again. I'm like, okay, a text message doesn't show that you care. Actions show that you care. So not moving across the country is a pretty good action to show that you care. Being there for your children.
And not sending a text message of basically, if you want them, you can have them.
Right. It's so infuriating, like, that she's taking this I miss my children thing when she made stupid choices. And I understand people make mistakes, but she's not remedying them, you know, very well. It also said that the father pretty much told the court that she was in hiding from law enforcement as a result of the attempted murder. And she claims, no, I wasn't hiding. I also mentioned that she had texted him, please call me so I don't have to call the police. It's my time with our babies. Stop hiding the kids and making things difficult.
Yeah.
And it, again, just same thing. Like, she keeps thinking that these text messages are gold and like they're going to help her move on. And I just feel like, no.
Well, remember, she did show up to Brandon's parents' house and try to steal the children in the middle of the night.
Well, I think, I've read two different things on that, that actually it was her time to see them. I've read something like that. I can't confirm it for sure. I haven't seen, like, a court document that said that was her time. But also, hell no, that person would not go near my children.
No, Brandon made the right call at that point.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, here's, I think, the biggest thing that came out of this document is page 2 of the document discusses the shooting. And something that stood out to me is that there were eyewitnesses. So it says eyewitnesses at the scene placed a Jeep with Texas plates pulling up shortly after the father left with the children. I mean, it's going to have less odds that the same Jeep that Charles had with Texas plates would be at this location.
Yep, in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. So that's just proves that someone in that vicinity, you know, had something to do with this. It mentioned, too, that Melanie had given a GPS watch to their son, Braxton. So she would have known when he left, you know, yep, to drop the kids off at school. And then, you know, theoretically, if he had dropped everyone off at school, she knew he'd also be alone when he returned.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jeep, again, they mentioned the Jeep did not have a back tire, making the back window accessible to be lifted and allow the shooter to fire the shot.
Yep.
And then where did we see a random tire before?
In that storage facility.
Right. So I just feel like there's so many connections there. How could they not have, you know, a part in this? Not saying, you know, Melanie for sure, but how would the others not have a part in it?
Yeah, agreed.
But I still think she's shifty, so I wouldn't take that off the table.
She is.
Yeah. Now, another big part of this was it is believed that Melanie Gibbs, they say Gibbs, I think it's Gibb, though, at least from her Facebook profile.
It's Gibb, yeah.
Will testify in father's case that mother was deeply involved with a doomsday cult. It is also believed that Miss Gibb will testify regarding the beliefs of the mother and other members hold.
I'm telling you guys, and I was in a Facebook group, and I mentioned this and got promptly shut down and smacked down about how it was irrelevant. Melanie Gibb holds the fucking key to all of this. She is like the, you know, the legend, right? Lori felt safe enough with Melanie Gibb to have both her and Chad call her to lie, right? About the children being with her. Melanie Gibb, it's all over Facebook now, where you can find the pamphlets for preparing a people. And Melanie Gibb, author and podcaster, is at these events with all these, you know, people and Chad. So, like, I feel vindicated this week. I would like to say that Melanie Gibb is really important in this case.
I believe so. And then for those that, again, entered the Vallow Freeway at a different time, back in February, so it was submitted February 18th, there was a really long affidavit. And I still had it on my desk, so I just flipped through it to get these dates and everything. But it was set on November 26th. That's when Lori claimed JJ was with Melanie Gibb, when detectives spoke with her at her Rexburg apartment. Mm-hmm. They could not contact Melanie.
She did not answer the phone.
Right. So then they talked to Lori again, and she said, oh, they may not answer because Melanie and JJ went to go see Frozen 2. The police told Lori to call Melanie and have them verify JJ's location, right? Mm-hmm. Then by the evening of the 26th, they still did not hear from her. Frozen 2 was not that long.
Yep.
So they tried her home and she wasn't there, but then she finally contacted the police, right? She stated JJ was not staying with her in her Arizona house and had not been there for several months. This is where I'm like not 1000% trustful of her, because between November 26th, her saying they're not here, all the way to December 6th. Mm-hmm. December 6th, she finally decided to contact Rexburg Police Department to inform them that both Lori and Chad had called her on November 26th at two separate times and asked her to tell police that JJ was with her, even though he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then she told police she declined the request. However, why the hell did it take her over a week to let police know about this? Because I feel like that week, they could have been like, okay, why is she calling people telling, you know, them to lie for her?
Melanie Gibb, she could have prevented and made this case go a lot faster, right? Because when the police called her to verify JJ's whereabouts, she could have been like, hell no, I haven't seen him in weeks. And then Lori and Chad would have been pretty much most likely forced to stay in Rexburg, right? They wouldn't have probably traveled over to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I fully believe, again, that Melanie Gibb is a key to all of this. She's aware of all of it. And I'm speculating, again, speculation time, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that Melanie knows how dangerous they can be and how dangerous they are. And I truly believe that she spent those days, like what, like 10 days or whatever, almost like weighing the pros and cons of actually going to the police.
I mean, that could be true. So that's why it might have taken so long. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe her life or her family's life could have been at risk.
She's completely flipped on them now, apparently.
Right, right. So, I mean, now that she's going to go and possibly, you know, tell everyone stuff, sure. But I'm still hesitant of her.
Mark my words, too. The police are dangling this over her head as far as her giving a false statement to police. So I believe most likely that the police are saying, hey, if you help us and give us information, we'll pretend that never happened.
Well, was it really a false statement that she just said he wasn't here? I mean, it was just adding extra information, like withholding information, maybe. I don't know.
Impeding in an investigation? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they really could get those charges on her or not, but it's still, I'm still very hesitant of how much I trust her.
I completely understand. She was giraffe balls deep in the cold.
Yes, yes, for sure. Anything else to add to their custody?
Nothing. Negative.
Well, then there was another request for discovery. Again, it was posted by Justin Lum. It was filed by Rob Wood on May 18th. I'm not an expert with these court documents, so I'm just going to summarize it a bit. But they're requesting copies of any and all books, papers, documents, photographs, tangible objects, or portions thereof, which are in the possession, custody, or control of the defendant, and which the defendant intends to introduce in evidence at the trial. So they just want anything that could potentially be evidence for her.
Yeah, anything that Lori's planning to produce as evidence.
So they're also requesting copies and basically any results, reports of physical, mental examinations, scientific tests or experiments made in connection with this particular case, anything that the defendant intends to use or introduce as evidence at the time of trial. So I don't know if maybe, you know, when she had gone and got that, I guess, mental evaluation, if that's going to somehow come into play later.
I know what it is.
What?
The portal.
Oh.
Maybe. The experiments. The experiment. Scientific tests.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny. I'm like, the scientific tests and experiments. Okay. they also want a list of all the names of witnesses the defense intends to bring to trial.
I am so excited for this. I am so effing excited to see what witnesses Lori and her side.
Right. I hope they're from other planets.
Me too. Nanu, nanu.
Request number 7 requests that the defendant notify the state within 14 days whether or not defendant intends to raise an issue of mental condition. And if so, I believe they have to call like expert witnesses for that.
I wonder if they're going to try to play the crazy card.
That,
like, old noodle hair is crazy, and so we're going to prove it. And then this is, you know, her fantasy religion and da-da-da-da-da. Or is Lori going to double down on it?
I don't know, because I feel like that's not going to go well, especially if she did get a mental evaluation at one point.
Yep.
Right? So, I don't
like
know.
Someone actually, you know, Charles, someone actually tried to have her on a mental health hold, involuntary hold. So,
let's see what comes of that. So, that was just filed on the 18th. Now, today, again, today's the 19th, there were a few videos that were released, and they were police body cams. And from what I can find, there's a 22-minute one and then an 11-minute follow-up video. So the initial 22-minute video, Justin Lum did post both videos that have a link to the YouTube channel, I believe. The first one, well, they're both from the 31st, so January 31st, 2019. Now, in this video, it's after police arrive and Charles is locked out of the house. So remember, we talked about how she had left. I believe she was staying at a hotel. I'd have to double check. But she had left. She had taken his truck from the airport, and so that was missing, and he can't get into his home. So he's trying to get into his home. Police are there. Throughout the conversation, again, it's 22 minutes of conversation between him and police and also trying to get into the home. But a couple things he mentioned is she won't go to a doctor because they'll find out she's a translated being. And he's just like, he's unloading. He's like, yeah, she thinks this. And he's just like, I don't know what's happening. At one point he's like, but I love her to death. And I'm like, oh, poor Charles.
So sad. I know.
And then he says, Charles said at one point that Lori told him to come take the kids. I don't care what happens to them. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, why couldn't Charles just take these kids and go? She can go be a translated being. Like, why? Why couldn't that just happen? And then one thing that stood out to me, too, is that he mentioned, like, the police officer, when they're in the garage, mentions, like, who's the oldest child, I think, or something along those lines. And he's like, well, I do have some, but they're grown. They live somewhere else. But here, Tylee's the oldest. But we also have Zach, our nephew, living with us. And I forget how old he was. But he's technically the oldest child in the home. Or I don't know if he was technically a child. But anyways, he lived in the home with them is what I'm getting at. So where is Zach the nephew? You know, what does he have to say about Lori's behavior? And is that Zach Cox that they're referring to? And is that why his name's on that other form as a potential witness, I believe?
I would say most likely.
So I don't know. There could be another Zach, but yeah, Zach the nephew lived with them. And I'm like, why hasn't anything come of like what he saw during this time, like her evolution to crazy? I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe, again, too, this is kind of weird to me. So maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I don't know protocol. And if someone is a police officer, like, feel free to email us for this. But why didn't they suggest that Charles call a locksmith to get into the home? Why do they suggest that he has all rights to break in, but I feel like knocking through the door should have been like last on the list somewhere.
I, from everything that has transpired in this case with police in Arizona, I have some questions.
Yeah, it's just so weird. I'm wondering if it's because he does talk about, like, money is missing and, like, he was going to have a hard time making payroll. So maybe they just, like, assumed There's no way to pay a locksmith. But also, like, I feel like there should have been friends or other family members that he could have called for help for a moment. Like, can you pay the locksmith? I'll get you back when everything's figured out. I've been locked out of a home before, and locksmiths can come and get you back in. And I live in Arizona again, so, like, it can be done. I don't know. So I don't understand why, yeah, they you know, barged in the door. I mean, one cop did say, like, if you're going to break in, I suggest in the garage, because then you can close the garage door, you know, not breaking a window or a different door. Makes sense. But also, there's other ways to get into a home.
I have to say that, like, all of the police that I've seen so far in Arizona remind me of Chief Wiggum from The Simpsons. They all do.
Well, there are some good ones. There are, yeah.
There are always good cops. There's always, I'm not one of these ACAB people. I do believe that there are some amazing cops out there who really care. And the Arizona's finest that I have seen so far have not been the finest.
Yeah, and I'm like, so maybe he said something else, because some things are like muted. You don't know what he's saying, or the camera gets kind of funky a couple of times. So maybe something, you know, was missed, or maybe I missed something, but I just felt like that was kind of an odd escalation there.
Right. It was really odd.
Mm-hmm. And then the 11-minute video is after all of this.
Yes. And now all of this was obtained via a request for the Freedom of Information Act. And in the 11-minute follow-up, it shows Charles telling the police that Lori was, acting erratically. She was threatening to kill him, and goes through the entire thing about how she thinks that he's no longer Charles. She calls him Nick Schneider.
Right.
And then he also mentions the large sums of money withdrawn from his account. And what I think is so messed up is that, again, Arizona's finest, the police, on the police report of this incident, it's noted that Charles seemed more concerned with the, quote, financial aspect of this than Lori's, quote, incoherence. So they even try to paint him as a, you know, shitty husband that doesn't care about his wife's well-being and just wants the money. When, from what I saw, right, in right. this footage,
he cares.
He's like, I love her to death. I, you know, it changed and da-da-da. Like, he obviously cares.
Right, and he's super confused. And again, people can put on a great act, I guess, for, you know, police, but I did not get that at all, that he was more concerned with the financial. He did say, like, I'm gonna have trouble, I think, making payroll or something along those lines. And yeah, that's freaking stressful. Like, yeah. I'd be losing it. But he goes over and over again, I don't know where my kids are. And he says kids plural, so he's including Tylee, you know, even though that's not his blood, he very much loves Tylee.
Yeah, and he did.
And then, yeah, he's like, and my boy, and it just, yeah, it broke my heart hearing him just, you know, not knowing where his kids are, being so confused. Imagine arriving to the airport, your car's no longer there, you get home, you're locked out,
you check your bank account, and you don't even have enough to pay your employees.
Right. And I understand everyone keeps saying, like, he was sending all these threatening messages, and if everyone knows of this threatening message, that means that there has to be a screenshot somewhere. I want to see if he was, or if it's just everyone trying to put everyone against Charles.
Yeah.
He seems sincere again, but, you know, I'm sure I could be fooled.
The only incoherence that I witnessed in this video was the police. And it's just, it's so sickening to me that we actually saw the hardcore video footage of this, you know, and then the police report was like, yeah, he just cared about the money, not really about his wife. I'm like, what?
No, he brought it up. Yeah, and I think rightly so. He's trying to show them, like, hey, I don't know what's going on here, but she took the money, she took the kids, she's not here, all of our cars are gone. And then, yeah, where was the nephew during this? Because she says her and the kids went, you know, and stayed somewhere else. Where's Zach? Which Zach is this? Is it the one that I'm thinking of, Zach Cox? Yeah, what was happening during that time with him? So that sums up a lot of this week's information.
Yep. That sums up the Lori Vallow update for this week.
So, again, then, by this Friday, May 22nd, get your questions in. We'll pick as many as we can get through. And then on next week's update, we'll go over some. So if you just entered the Lori Freeway, tell us what you want to know.
You can email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at wesawthedevil, leave a message on Instagram. We have a post there specifically that we're collecting questions from, mm-hmm. which is wesawthedevilpodcast is our Instagram handle.
Right.
And then again on Facebook is just wesawthedevil.
So reach out any way that you feel most comfortable, and we will do our best to get to as many questions as possible.
We are looking forward to it. That wraps it up for this episode, for this update. And don't forget, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. Until next crime.